Ah, the iPad. Where is my iPad? They've stolen my iPad. I mean, look how fucking big that thing is. It's like he's holding up a plasma screen.
George, where's the shoe?
Do you remember when it went missing? And like, there are only a few things, because Cyril's presidency has been mostly boring. The only thing I remember is like, oh, they've stolen my iPad. Where's my iPad? Meanwhile, the thing's as fucking this big. Is that a normal size iPad?
I don't know. I think you get two. I don't know.
My iPad's it's not that big.
It's half a laptop.
No, maybe he has terribly small hands, but I don't think. Is it possible he's got little tiny Trump hands?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe that's the mark of a good leader.
Also, there's you have to be a certain age to take pictures with your iPad, and it looks like he's holding it up to take pictures.
Mm. Or now, to have a phone where you have to unfold it to go, hello?
I had the coolest dream the other night. I dreamt that I got back my old Nokia that had, because we were talking about it on the show, so it must have activated something in my brain. I was like, that old, that very cool, steel sort of brushed aluminium, and you press the tit and it goes, whoop, hello.
Mm.
Very cool. I like that much more than this shit. Hello? That's not as fun. Sorry, not as much fun. All right, so lots of good stuff to get into this morning. You are, as a linguist and someone who studied linguistics, going to be very interested in this. I found a clip of a woman who explains how medieval English would have sounded. Are you curious?
Well, I mean, they make it up in movies.
No, but she actually knows how it sounds. She's talking about English from sort of the 13 and 1400s.
Sure, yeah.
And that was Chaucer, right? So that you would have studied in English at university. And Canterbury Tales might have been a big part of your prescribed reading. But take a listen to this, because we often think, oh, well, if I went back in time, I'd be able to speak English. No, they wouldn't understand you.
Language.
They'd think you were completely, they'd think you had a learning disability.
Mm. I mean, you just have to look at Shakespeare if you want to take something that's easily accessible and you already know.
But Shakespeare, you can understand what he's saying. Like, I played a clip for some friends of mine. It's kind of fun that I subject my friends to. Fucking torture.
Sit down, everybody.
Being my
I
friend.
Want to
right.
Play you something.
Right, everyone. We're going to watch the Band of Brothers speech from King Henry V, part 2 by William Shakespeare. Are you ready? This is very moving. And then they all go, all right, we know what's coming.
Again.
And then he goes off and men abed in London will think themselves accursed they were not here and hold their manhood cheap. Anyway, it's a whole thing. So I can understand Shakespeare, but look at this, because this is not not what you think it is.
What did medieval English sound like? A good shorthand way to figure out what medieval English sounds like is to take all vowels and pronounce them as you would in French and pronounce every letter. The word for wife would be pronounced weef. The word for house would be pronounced hus. The word knight, knicht. Here is what the Lord's Prayer would have sounded like in Middle English, probably sometime in the 14th century. Ur Father that art in heavenus, hallowed be thy name, thy realm or kingdom come to be, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
Hmm. So I've joked and said temptation, but that's how they would have said it.
Mm.
And evil. And knigget. Knicht.
It's fascinating.
Knicht.
I love it so much.
That's cool, right?
Yeah.
So I almost want to go and see how they would do a whole passage of, a paragraph of text in ancient medieval. Or not ancient, but medieval.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to see that. And they also, I saw a video the other day of how they think Romans would have sounded. Because, of course, we don't know how they would have pronounced some words in Latin. And even though we've got Latin languages like French and Spanish and Italian, we're not sure how they would. Would they sound more like Italians? Would they sound more like the Spanish, more like the French? Or would it be completely different? It's weird, right?
Mm.
I mean, I find this stuff fascinating. They've also, another series of videos that I went down the rabbit hole with just months ago, is somebody who is trying to figure out how ancient Egyptian would have sounded. Based on I think what they've done is they've programmed AI to try and figure out what the facial expressions might have looked like. I mean, it's just incredible what machines can do these days. They've got a fairly good handle on how ancient Egyptian might have sounded. Because some of the hieroglyphs are actually more sound than they are the symbol of the thing. So if something sounds like bird, if that was a word for ancient Egyptians, which it wasn't, but then the bird would have more been there to indicate the sound than it would have been to indicate
the
a bird.
The actual bird, yeah. Yeah.
So you would have used bird as a part of a word rather than, you know, the description. But I think that stuff's amazing. I mean, that is really, give me videos like that to watch rather than Formula One. I'm fucking in the whole way.
100%.
Right? And then we discovered, you know, the why are you gay guy?
Yes. Why are you gay?
Why are you gay? And then he goes, I'm not. And you are gay. So that guy... They're taking him everywhere, and he's being interviewed by people. This guy asks him, how can you tell? And this is a useful thing. How can you tell if someone's gay? Right? So look at this.
How do you know if a guy is straight or not?
Look. Look.
You are gay.
You are gay. I love that guy. And also the music, that's like his brain is figuring it out. He can tell.
Yeah.
Right. You are gay.
What's he gonna come up with?
Jesus, just missed coffee all over the place. All right. Okay, and then just to remind you, in case you encounter a plumbus somewhere in your house.
Do you use Doom for a plumbus? It's like you need something.
The best thing you can, if you missed out, it is. You don't want to deal with that, right? The plumbus, this is how they make a plumbus. It's all very disappointing. Oh my God. Just stop, James. It's disgusting. Just stop. Oh. But if you encounter a plumbus, apparently the best thing to do is to stomp your feet and scream, and then it'll get a fright and run away.
I heard it multiplies and comes towards the voice.
A plumbus. All right. I do find angry old people extremely amusing, because really by the time you're old, you should have tempered yourself a little bit. There's this guy who films his grandmother. She's like a really coarse, rough Appalachian, like country girl. And she's obviously grown up with like a very foul mouth as well, because she swears all the time. Anyway, this guy keeps putting his gran in situations where she gets furious with him. In the first clip, she's sitting in the car, and he's obviously programmed the radio to, it's playing something off his phone, to play the song that he's had AI make about how his gran is shitting all the time. And she's rude to him, and how she must be nicer to her grandson. And she kind of is listening to it, and then she realizes it's about her, and she gets furious. So I find this amusing. Forgive me, but here's the grand getting cross.
Constantly shitting the pants, leaving shit stains at every glance. Angry grandma shits in the store. Angry grandma just shit a little more. Angry grandma was constantly smoking cigarettes. Every other word that comes out of her mouth is shit fucking ass. She needs to stop being so damn mean to her loving sweet grandson Jake, because Jake is great.
Oh, motherfucker! Who in the hell is singing this fucking song?
Angry grandma was constantly shooting her pants, leaving shit stains at every glance. Angry grandma shits in the store. Angry grandma just shit a little more. Angry grandma was constantly smoking cigarettes. Every other word that comes out of the shit fucking ass, she needs to stop being so damn mean to her loving sweet.
Oh, son, fuck yeah! That, yeah, right, son of a bitch! I'll find out. I'll make Jake tick. Find out who in the fuck is singing this motherfucking song.
I mean, that's sure. She really does have quite a foul mouth, right?
Zero sense of humor.
But I like her. Like, there's something likable about that, right? Angry grandma.
I've seen her before.
she's quite famous now, Angry Grandma. And then there's this, you see, he comes up with these clever ways of like really pissing her off.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So they go into Walmart and he has changed all the DVD covers.
Yes, that's the one
to
I've seen.
Her face. Like Shrek is her, and he's got all these different like movies, and she now wants to watch a movie or buy a DVD. I don't know when this was recorded, but it's at Walmart, so it could have been yesterday. And he's put her, he's superimposed her face on all the DVD cover. I mean, he's gone to a lot of trouble, you know. He's really worked hard to try and piss this woman off. I love it. Look at how she reacts there.
Fuck. Good. Look at that.
It's Spider-Man.
That's fucking me. That's my fucking picture.
That's Peter Parker.
That ain't Peter Parker. That is fucking me. Son of a bitch. Look here. Look at Shrek. They even got my fucking face on his eyes. Oh, hell no. Oh, motherfucker. They even got me looking like Will on Stranger. Son of a bitch.
What the hell's
Where
going on
the
here?
Fuck they get these?
Hey, they got the new Grand Theft Auto.
Motherfucker, that's me. How the fuck they get that?
I don't know, Granny. Did you give them permission to use?
Hell no. Motherfucker, what the fuck's going on? Did you do this shit?
That is, I mean, there is something really, really cool.
So easy to piss off, though.
She's going to have a heart attack soon. And carrying a lot of
talk
anger.
Talk about waking up on what Dr. Hanan was saying.
Yeah.
She's a chin down
she's
person.
She's a chin down person, that one. Angry grandma. Wow. But I do think she's fun. I'm going to follow her and see how long she lasts. I don't know. He's going to kill her eventually.
Yeah.
But at least he's doing fun things with his granny. Most people put their granny in a home and they never see them again. At least he's doing fun things.
Yeah.
And he's keeping the old biddy amused. I mean,
he's giving her something to live for.
I mean, she's so angry.
She's not going to go to bed because she knows that there's something she needs to be
angry
about.
No, she's cross. She's very cross. And I like it. It's very good. All right. While we're on the old people, there's one more thing I want to show you. Like an old lady answering the phone. By the way, they always have, old people always have these really loud ringtones on their phones. Very loud, right? And then her friend is phoning her just to annoy her. And she's like not taking any of it. She's in no mood to be messed around. Look at this. Oh, it's Frozen. Oh, it's Frozen, as in like your favorite movie, James? Frozen? Yeah. Let it go, let it go. That's James. He walks in here in the morning singing that song. All right, well, while they're buggering around with that, all these false starts. It'd be horrible to have sex like this, imagine. All right, I'm ready. No.
Bitch. Oh, yeah, what do you want? Don't laugh, Arlene. I ain't got time for that shit.
All right, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Don't laugh, Arlene. I don't have time for that shit.
Great. Family members around me are getting to that age.
I know. Yeah, yeah.
You've got the one going, I can't see, and the other one going, pardon.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Don't have a lot of time for that. Yeah. All right. So tell us quickly about the Knysna Forest, because I've always been. Ever since we read Kringa in a Bos back in primary school, we were forced, I think it was high school or primary school, one of the two.
Yeah.
You know, the and Filasakint and all of those stories about the Knysna Forest. And I've only been to Knysna a couple of times. That's a long time.
Dalian Matia.
She was the author.
In the Forest, 1985.
And part of the story was that there were these elephants that lived in the Knysna Forest. Right?
Yes, which they still do, right?
Yeah, Otanikwe elephants or whatever they're called. And because of the people who, the foresters, the people who would cut down trees for they made furniture and paper and all kinds of other things out of the wood, the forests were decimated in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and the elephant population was almost completely extinguished. Now, apparently, there are still elephants in those forests, but they're rare and they're quiet and they, you know, these elephants are almost like ghosts.
Yeah.
People aren't sure they exist.
Exactly. How many do you think there are?
Well,
if
I don't
have to count.
I don't know, because I'm the last person you should be asking something complicated like that about. I've heard they're just ghosts. I think there's one pair left.
There's one.
There's one elephant.
There's one elephant
left. Oh my God, that's terrible. One lonely elephant. Is that it?
I didn't know this. I thought that's her.
Oh, shit.
She's the last remaining native elephant in Knysna. So now, the whole big thing is, do we introduce a herd or do we leave her be? That's what the nature scientists are debating at the moment with her. So to give you the quote from Lillian Mathieu.
Oh, she's been quoted
on Circles in the Forest. Well, this is from her book. She said, Oldfoot, speaking about an elephant in Knysna, has his own laws, forest law. The same law that makes the day break, that keeps the seven star on its course, that makes the moon obey its phases, that decides the path of the sun in winter and in summer, that sends the rain from the forest floor to the top of the highest tree. This law pulsates through everything, like the rhythmical breathing of an almighty being. And she was speaking about a specific elephant named Oldfoot. This elephant's name is Strangefoot. She's called that because she has
a
strange footprint.
Just hold on. Her elephant was Oput because he was Afrikaans.
Yes.
It's Afrikaans elephant.
Yes.
And this one is called?
Strangefoot. That's her name.
Strange would be?
Because she has strange.
What's strange in Afrikaans? I've gone completely blank. I wouldn't say snarks.
Yeah.
Anyway, you say she's got a funny footprint.
Yes, yeah, a bit of a broader footprint than she should have.
She's the last one. I mean, that's so sad. How depressing.
So what do you do with her? I mean, this is the debate. Anyway, she's now 50 years old, believed to be the only surviving native Knysna elephant in the forest. Fierce debate going on about whether to save her by introducing more elephants or just leave her be. And apparently,
Vreemdevoet.
Vreemdevoet.
Okay.
Vreemdevoet.
Vreemdevoet. It's an animal. It doesn't have a foot. It has a poot.
So, yes, there were once 1,000 elephants that historically roamed the forest and the Otanikwa Tsitsikamma area. And it was the San people who originally started chronicling their presence.
Hmm.
So today, she is the only elephant consistently tracked by San parks. And yes, so I mean, what should happen with her?
I don't know. Gray says introduce more elephants. Just make sure that the locals don't eat them. I mean,
well, to be you know, it wasn't the locals who actually caused the dwindling of the population. It was the colonialists.
It was industry.
Mm.
It was industry. I don't know. I mean, I'm not the guy to ask on this because you know how I feel. Like, I'm very mercenary about this. Some species, they don't live because they just weren't strong enough to make it. The earth has got, I don't know how many thousands and thousands of species in the mammal, what do we call it? Phylum, genus. Mm. What are we? Anyway, there used to be all kinds of creatures on Earth. If you take our planet's history going back to, you know, let's go to the beginning of dinosaurs at the Triassic? Triassic, Jurassic, Cretaceous. And then all of those were wiped out. I mean, the point I'm getting to is that 99% of all the species that have ever walked the Earth are all gone.
Mm.
Okay, so
new
ones are propagated, but out of all the species, including the ones that are around now, that have ever existed on planet Earth, 99% of them are gone. They're not here anymore. They have become extinct. And a lot of those had nothing to do with humans. A lot did have to do with humans, but long before we came along, other things were wiping them out. They were being eaten. Diseases were taking them out. There were natural disasters. I mean, the Earth is a pretty hostile place, especially the further you go back in time. So all the creatures, from the tiniest little microbes to the biggest megafauna, you know, the kinds of things that have all died out because they were so enormous that they would make our cars look like a blip on the horizon.
Mm.
All of those species are gone, with or without human help. So I don't get terribly romantic about this. I feel sorry for this poor elephant, the last one in the Knysna forests. But if she dies, she dies.
Mm.
It's not a popular point of view. And I'm going to get lambasted for this in the comments.
No, but I mean, you know. You see, the thing is, the forest can't even, they don't even know if it can sustain more elephants, never mind like a huge herd. So it is what it is.
Well, Super Jacob Zuma says they have introduced elephants before, but they didn't manage to take well to the forest. They didn't adjust to it well. Were chased away by the matriarch. They ended up on the outskirts of the forest and had to be removed because, of course, there are farms there and then it's a
community's living there. It's not like it used to be.
So, I mean, most of the elephants that you would bring from other parts of the country are used to savannah.
Mm.
So they wouldn't know what to do in a forest. It would be very weird to them. Unless they'd grown up in the forest like this old lady had, it's going to be weird, right? So I don't know. I'm not the expert. I shouldn't be asked about this.
Yeah. No, it's just strange.
How could you ask me? That's like asking me about a plumbus, Leanne.
You know much more about plumbi than you do.
No, I don't. I've only found out about them this week. What are you talking about? This is insane. I'll tell you what we're going to talk about later. Is cannabis and the cannabis industry.
Oh, we were just talking about that this morning.
Yeah, with James and Flex.
And how I was stoned throughout COVID.
That's right. Leanne was stoned for 3 solid weeks in COVID. We'll find out. We'll find out more. Stick around for that and a whole lot more. Okay, but thanks to cloning and CRISPR technology, we have Tasmanian tigers and red cows and all that cool stuff again. Yeah, there may be a time where humans are so clever that we can Jurassic Park animals out of extinction.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know whether the dodo wants to come back. I don't know whether
such a stupid name. Maybe it doesn't.
The dodo was so... Okay, so for all those environmentalists and conservation fiends out there who are going to be upset by me saying that I don't care whether these animals go extinct or not, let me explain. And I do love animals and I do love the natural environment and I don't think humans have the blind right to go out and wipe every other creature out. I don't think that would be a very good state of affairs, okay? But the dodo, as a case in point, what a stupid fucking animal this is. It would run up to people who were trying to hunt it because it had never... Look at it. Look at that stupid thing. And apparently tasted great.
Well, it's got very small wings and a lot of eating bits.
So sailors would land in Mauritius and they could either hunt the birds that knew to get the hell away from them, or they could hunt that. And that would run up to them, go, oh, how are you? You know, big, stupid old dodo. And then they would go, it's not even running away. Or boom. And then they'd roast it over a nice fire and have some dodo, which is like chicken, only bigger, lasts longer, probably tastes better. Mmm, dodo. I heard it tasted very nice. That's what they said. And obviously these things went extinct because they were just really, really stupid and completely unused to humans. So I don't know. Do we want to bring that back? Do we want the collective IQ of the animal kingdom to be hit fucking 3 points down just because of the dodo? I don't know.
Yeah, if you think pigeons are annoying.
Yeah. Dodo must get in the way. Imagine a big pigeon.
Imagine massive pigeons.
That's what it is. A big pigeon.
Just running up to you randomly.
Whatever noise it made.
Yeah.
I don't have time for it. Sorry. Dodo looks like it's ready to become a Joburg mayor. Well, again, good case in point, right? So if Gwamanda, the former mayor of Johannesburg, the tick mayor, the guy who, like, he couldn't host a press conference. If we had more of us like him, would that be good for humanity or bad for it? Let's think about that. Same with the dodo. Good for the bird kingdom, bad for the bird kingdom.
Giving clever birds a bad name.
Right, exactly. And they are clever birds. Not that one.
But your African greys would not be impressed.
No, they would not be. They'd go, what the fuck is wrong with you? Anyway, let's move on. We can't take forever on this. Leanne has something else to tell us, which is quite useful and interesting. In fact, she's got a bunch of stories up her sleeve. The video that could be on the path to overtaking TikTok's most liked video.
Yes. So the most liked video, in other words, the video with the most likes.
Oh, really? Dodo? Okay.
I'm just trying to see quickly how Which many.
Let me guess how stupid this video might be. Because TikTok
this is what I knew you okay, would react.
Here's humans being stupid again. I'm going to be unimpressed with the most liked video on TikTok, aren't I?
I think you'll be surprised.
Okay.
Just
lay
think
it on
about
me.
Think about the fact that this is not a filmmaker. This is a person on TikTok who creates content.
Okay.
Okay, let's see it.
Viva Mexico!
Siempre me mire tranquilo y al negocio siempre le mete los kilos. Ando trabajando, me abre los caminos. Unos dicen que yo ya no soy el mismo.
Quiero que se oiga mi llanto. Cómo me dolió perderte después de quererte tanto.
Mexicano, de guerra. El mexicano, esa es mi bandera. Yo la levanto por donde quiera. Desde blanco rojo hasta que muera.
El grito siempre el rey.
I think that's pretty impressive.
It must have taken her a long time to do that. I mean, that's very well put together, but
yeah.
I certainly hope she's Mexican. Otherwise, she's going to be accused of all kinds of cultural appropriation.
No, she's definitely Mexican.
Okay, so that's very good. Is that the most liked video?
It's on its way. It could be becoming that way. So she herself has 29.4 million followers.
All right.
She started out as a content creator, doing mainly makeup looks, and then started, you know, becoming really creative with her videos.
Doris Jocelyn, that's a very Jamaican name. I mean, a Mexican name, right?
Jamaican?
Well, no, I heard Jocelyn Jamaican in my head. Okay, Doris Jocelyn doesn't sound like a Mexican name.
She may have, it may not be her real name. I'm not
Doris
sure.
Doris Jocelyna. Huh? No?
Surely.
No, I don't know. Okay. But like, that's good.
Yeah,
I'll give credit where it's due. Yeah. That's good.
The most liked video is by Bella Porch.
Yeah.
And if you look at like the top 10 most liked, nothing is as creative as Jocelyn.
How did those other ones get to be the top 10 most liked then? Especially if they're so stupid.
I don't know. Algorithms.
Oh, I mean, this is
finding
you know,
the right platforms to land on. But for me, that content creator is,
no, she's good.
Is good.
No, she deserves the likes and the hits and the fucking views. Yeah. Good for her. And you know what? If you're going to take as much trouble and time as she did with all the different looks, all the different outfits, it's very good. I can see how that worked.
Mm.
Cool. Okay. Good. It's not.
I was trying to restore your
faith.
It is
not John Milton's, you know, Virgil going into the underworld. What is it called? The descent. Oh my God.
I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't help blank. You.
It's not a work that will last for all time. I don't think in 10 years' time people will be watching that video going, oh, this is still, this is such a hit. Okay, but do we not want things that will last forever?
No, that's the point of TikTok.
Okay.
You just kind of watch it and it's done.
Okay.
But I was glad to see that it wasn't something stupid. So the most liked currently is Bella Porch lip syncing to a song M to the B by rapper Millie B. You know? So I was just excited
I was on the money about stupid before that. Okay. So
yeah.
God damn. All right. And finally, if rain on a wedding day means good luck, what does this mean? Explain yourself.
This is a video that's somebody whose parents got married in her video, the 90s, but it's actually more early 2000s because there's a lap, an iPad, speaking of Cyril.
An iPad. Okay, yeah.
But this is just a wedding video that she's remembered that of her parents getting married.
Uh-huh.
And it's all romantic with the horse and carriage.
Okay.
Until the horse lets out the longest fart. But my best, my absolute best is the bridesmaid at the back, the maid of honor, how she's literally fighting for her life to try to stop laughing and she can't.
All right. No, that's cool. We'll watch this. That sounds like a lot of fun. Let me introduce our guest to you who will be joining us in just a second or two, because I think this could be quite interesting and right up some people's alley. His name is Johan Slubber. He is a CEO and entrepreneur of Nexus Pharma. And they're a company that is getting involved in South Africa's medicinal cannabis sector. His expertise and leadership have been instrumental in advancing the industry, including securing the first GMP, which is a good manufacturing practice license that paved the way for South Africa's first cannabis business to list on the JSE earlier this year. So this is big business now. It's no longer just some kind of fringe thing, you know, that people are doing as a cash crop, which is what they originally, when we just started to make moves into legalizing cannabis. It's really happening, and it's happening in a big way. We'll speak to Johan in just a second or two. All right, have you got that video of the wedding day? Oh God, all these stop starts. It's very, very difficult, you know. you can't get into it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I almost wish I could just press the button myself. Go on, James, play the video. I'm going to sit here and make this awkward and uncomfortable for you until it's. Do 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 do, ding di 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 di. James and Flex are fucking around. I'm going to make sure that all of this. You got this video from Leanne when? Oh, you got it last night, and yet here we are.
It's still going, but it's just very faint in the background.
This horse is farting the whole time.
You can't hear it there, but it's still going. Jesus. She was just finished. But what I enjoyed were the comments, of course, which is often the best the best part of these videos. The one said, I'm the type of person who would chronically laugh periodically throughout the entire wedding reception when I thought about it. King of Hash Brown says, was the horse mic'd up?
Are you sure it wasn't that bridesmaid?
Well, that was she the looked other quite, thing.
She looked a bit hefty to me. It looks like she could easily have expelled that much wind.
Some people said they read it wrong and thought, I thought you said your mom was loudly peeing and farting. And a lot of people said that. They said, oh, my God.
That's revolting.
I thought it was your mom.
You know, for most women, their wedding day is the most important day ever. And they prepare for it for months, and they get into perfect shapes. They can fit in that wedding dress, and everything has to be exactly just right. And then the horse farts, and it just ruins all the romance.
A long-winded fart.
But I mean, I heard just the beginning of that.
Yeah, I know.
With the horse, it's on and on. A lot.
Sarah says, I would pay extra for this at my wedding.
Sure. Okay. All right, so let's talk about the cannabis industry, because I think this is a growing industry. So, Johan, nice to have you here. How are you?
Oh, good, and you? Thanks.
Very
for
good.
Me.
Just grab that mic, pull it a little bit closer. There we go. Perfect. No, what a pleasure, man. All right, so first of all, congrats on kind of making things move as quickly as they have. Obviously, all over the world now, people are starting to open up to the idea that the cannabis industry is a thing. Yeah. We all know about the cannabinoids in the oils that everybody's using. We also know about the THC. But maybe you can explain to me what's happening from a business point of view. How big is the cannabis industry in South Africa?
Yeah, so the industry is huge. You know, in a recent article that I was in Business Tech, Yeah. I disclosed that we're looking at a 30 billion rand industry at least.
Just 30 here, billion?
30 billion.
That's million, you know, with a B.
Yeah, with a B. And and the thing is, you know, since 2017, and this is really, you know, this is really a personal thing as well.
Yeah.
Since 2017, it's been 7 years up until where we are today. And we are nowhere to be seen as a global player in this space.
And we should be because, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, Johan, but we have huge amounts of arable land. It's perfect land for growing this stuff.
Yeah.
It is an extremely lucrative crop if grown at scale. Why are we so far behind?
Yeah, I know, exactly. And mostly, you know, it's difficult to pin it down to just one thing. I think it's quite a collaboration of things, including regulations, quality standards, the government, you know, the private sector. And, you know, a lot of these challenges that arose is when the whole thing happened and the big boom in 2017, when it was legalized, you know, back then, we in Lesotho were one of the first countries to start jumping on this.
Yeah.
And everyone started jumping into cultivation, not knowing, you know, where they're going to send these products to. What's the quality requirements? You know, regulations commercially was just happening and changing and being implemented. And the Canadian market, a lot of us learned from the Canadian markets. But, you know, we've got such favorable conditions, Gareth. We, you know, the cost of labor, electricity, you know, land availability, farmers. We've got some of the best farmers in the world in South Africa.
So, okay, let's just break this down for starters. Can anyone grow it? Which strain? Because we know that's massively important. How far advanced is the science when it comes to this stuff? Because, you know, for most cash crops in the world, tobacco, food crops, all of those, it's been worked out for years. And people have already bought the seeds from a particular place and that they grow the best seeds that produce the best crops. So there's a plan. We don't have that for cannabis. Well, we might, but it's very recent.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things, Gareth, is the push and change between recreational use and medicinal use, you know, pharmaceutical side. And I think that has been one of the biggest differences with this whole sector moving forward. And you'll see recently Steyn Huisen called for a sandbox approach as well to streamline regulation.
Who's the the minister, the minister of the DA guy, the minister of agriculture. Sorry, that was stupid of me.
Having said that, you know, that's where we feel.
What's a sandbox approach? That sounds like what Leanne takes with her cats, where she puts a sandbox in the room and they shit and piss in there.
That's the approach.
Is that the approach?
No, I couldn't tell you. I mean, I'm not even surprised. But,
okay, so he's a politician just talking.
Streamline of regulations.
Trying
to, you know, create a standard and standardize a lot of things. Different government entities doing different things. Streamline. But, you know, what we are doing is, and I want to tell you where we've seen a massive gap in the market.
Okay.
Is we, since 2017, again, you know, when this all started, there is over 130 cultivation licenses. So you get a cultivation license and you get a manufacturing license when you apply to SAFRA. This is now on the pharmaceutical medicinal side.
Okay.
So the cultivation license allows you to cultivate, harvest the product, dry it, trim it, bulk package for wholesale for export.
Okay.
So you can't send it directly to the end consumer, bulk package, export to a wholesaler or another manufacturing company.
Okay.
So since then, having over 130 licensed facilities today, where some of them has costed between 10 to 300 million rand to set up.
Jesus.
There is less than 20 that I know of. I've done about 35 when I was in consultation in South Africa. There's less than about 20 of those exporting on commercial scale to the markets.
20 out of 130?
On exporting on bulk scale to commercial markets. It's shocking.
And where are they? Do we know where they're exporting
to?
So
there's quite a few, mostly Australia.
Okay.
You know, the Australian market, a massive demand. And this is why it's so ironic, guys, because we produce in rand. The foreign exchange benefit is huge, the upside. You know, dollars, euros, pounds. You know, the cost of production is so much.
When you talk about a license, who gets those license fees and why would you need it?
So the license fees is very, very little compared to the capital investment required for these facilities.
Who issues the license?
SAFRA, the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority.
Okay.
So, And then the other license, manufacturing license, allows further manipulation of the plant. So now you can take the raw material, you know, the buds or so on. then you can extract, you can make oils, do extractions, you can make the final product, you then export or send it to the end consumer directly or to other manufacturing companies or big pharma companies. But that's where we saw the gap, because we said, we don't want to be just another cultivator in this space. It doesn't help, you know. We want to be a company focused on catering specifically for third-party product absorption. Let's start creating market access and get rid of this problem that we have, because where's all those other products going to? People are so desperate for a return on investment. Not that they want to sell it, you know, illegally, and some of them are doing it. But I know the moment that they have an export channel, you know, they'll jump on it right away. But there's standards and a lot of things that comes with it.
So I got a few questions here, and I don't want to miss out on these because people want to know the answers. So Johan, I'm more of an HPS purist. Are LEDs the real way to grow in captivity with the cost of ACs, CO2, and irrigation? At worst, it's twice as expensive to run, but I feel my yield is better with HPS. What's HPS?
High pressure sodium lights. So you get different kinds of lights.
You know, so this is for indoor growing.
It depends. You can use it in a greenhouse as well, but mostly people will use HPS for indoor. But you know, we've got a cultivation specialist in all of this, but for me, this is the ironic thing once again. A lot of people, since this all started, what's the best medium to use? What's the best lights to use? What's the best, you know, irrigation system that we can implement? But what does the standard say? And what is the requirement from a standard perspective that can allow you to be on that standard in order to export that product? So is this type of a growth, for example, is it for recreational? Is it for pharmaceutical? What is the intended product that they intend to achieve? You know, what's the profile of that product? And a lot of these things, you know, you need to use registered genetics, registered nutrients, you know, specific lights.
But that's if you're growing it at massive scale, right? And in order to make it profitable.
Yes, on a commercial scale business.
Yeah, because these Europeans and the Australians are going to say, did you use organic pesticides and this kind of thing, right? Someone says here in the comments that they know somebody who tried to export. Yeah, one exporter had a 17 million rand export rejected because non-organic insecticide was detected.
Absolutely.
So you've got to follow those rules if you want to make it big at scale, absolutely, right?
But do those rules then apply to other crops as well?
Yeah, so that's the thing, guys. This is one of the biggest misconceptions is we're dealing with Schedule 6 for THC, which is a psychoactive compound.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you'll hear, but how can they do this on a plant? The toxicity of this product is less than caffeine in coffee that we consume. Mm. But the challenge is tomorrow it's psilocybin or another product. So if you want to enter the pharmaceutical sector, you know, there needs to be certain quality standards you need to comply with for safety, you know, and compliance. But I do feel that there's separate provision that must be made, you know, for different uses.
Okay, so let's talk about this for a second, because Slippery Pickle says also, I have real concerns with the industry using different kinds of extracting oil. Many use dangerous solvents, which use heavy metals and are consumed by the consumer. How is this regulated? This is kind of what you're talking about. You're dealing with some very, very potentially, you know, dangerous, or at very least, they have an enormous reaction on the central nervous system of human beings. So we need to know how much of that should be allowed to just be traded willy-nilly.
Yeah.
So THC, we know, is the psychoactive component, but there are also all kinds of health benefits to the cannabinoids, which are the other parts that are used in the oils.
Absolutely.
Is that more or less correct?
100%.
Okay, take me from there to the next level.
Yeah, so to just give feedback on that comment, you know, there is regulations and standards for those extraction oils. So you get certain alcohol extractions, ethanol, butane, but there is quality requirements from an ISO perspective and a standard perspective for manufacturing. Like an aspirin would make a paracetamol.
Sure.
You know, there's same standards for this as well. And then there's labs that will test on certain profiles of that sample that you will then take and send to the lab to then verify the quality, the metals, potency, microbials, everything that may be in that product. So there's if we wanted to start making paracetamol, I always use this example today, we will need to conform to a certain set of standards.
Of course.
And that's it, you know, but it's figuring it out.
The people who are using this stuff want to know what they're getting.
Absolutely.
At the end of it, right? Otherwise, and this is always the danger with drugs. And Leanne was talking about how she likes the really hardcore drugs earlier. But I mean, you don't know what's in there.
You have no idea. No.
Right? So you buy it from some.
Starts off pretty pure, but then, yeah.
you end up with some terrible shit later down the line. Same is true here in the case of THC or the oils that you might want to use. So what are the rules around the THC part of this? Because we know people use this recreationally. People have smoked weed for hundreds of thousands of years. So that's nothing new. But when it comes to producing the plant at scale industrially and then manufacturing stuff from it, how do you separate out at that first stage the THC products from the others?
Yeah, so it comes down to genetics as well when you start. So you'll get certain psychoactive compounds in certain plants and genetics, which is easy to identify depending on your business. And then depending on your extraction method and process methods, you can extract different cannabinoids, different compounds from that product. But THC currently is Schedule 6. There is provision in the private purposes bill for personal consumption and use, but the limitation is so low that we might as well say zero.
Really?
Because it's 0.0001 or 2.
Okay.
CBD Schedule 4, of course, but they do make provision for complementary thresholds for 20 milligram daily dosages.
Okay.
But not more than 600 milligrams per pack size in a 30-day period. So 600 milligrams. I'm sure you've seen in pharmacies some of these products, which is supposed to fall under those thresholds. But 2 years ago, just after COVID and all of the mess, two and a half years, there were 10 products taken from shelves in pharmacies and tested to see what's in them and based on what the packaging says is in them. And there was only one product that came back that really had in what it said it did.
Wow. But what did the others have?
No, different oils that's used in extractions, like your olive oils and stuff you'll use.
Oh, no.
And, others of them didn't even have THC in them, or CBD in them. There was a whole thing. I'll share it with you. There was a whole test done.
So basically, they're all bullshit artists.
Yeah, but
at the same, this is damaging to the industry. Mm. That
and
you're
and
trying
the stigma, around this product, And for me, it's so bad because for all of us, but I mean, this product, there's great, great properties. I had the privilege of being introduced to Mara Gordon. She's considered one of the top 10 most influential women in the world in cannabis. She's been on TEDx and all of this stuff. She's worked with doctors with cancer treatments. In conjunction with those treatments, she would give her patients, cannabis. Mm-hmm. There's a whole show on Netflix called Weed the People.
Yes.
So really, you should watch it. Great, great show. And in this, you can see there's great, great properties of this product. And the thing is just the stigma that's now evolving. It's changing people's perspective of this product. And for me, it's a concern in the industry because, all these dispensaries that you call them and social clubs that you get, you can buy from A to Z anything in those clubs. And that's a challenge because a lot of those clubs, those people are making that stuff in their garages or their homes. And the poor consumer has no idea what they're ingesting. And a lot of times I'll hear and people say, John, but there's no regulations for recreational use. Why can't we sell it? The demand is huge locally.
Yeah.
And it's not that Safra does not make provision for that. There's not yet enough clinical data to back those registrations of those products in order for you to say, okay, if you're going to take it, it's going to work like this and this and this and this. That's a side effect.
Bitcoin Butt says, I grew 6 plants last year and I harvested 60 kilograms, if not more. Save yes, so much. Like, that's a lot from 6 plants. This day must be monsters.
Yeah, he must come and he must send us a CV or something. Maybe
dude, maybe you've discovered some kind of monster strain, like a mutant strain of cannabis that you can suddenly sell to the world for millions. That obviously is an area of massive development, right? Because now that we can test these things in laboratories, we can try different genetic combinations. And obviously, I remember a friend of mine, she used to grow a few plants and she was very scientific about it. She grew them indoor. She got her seeds from a certain place. She kept the male plants and the female plants far away from each other because there are male and female plants.
Yes.
And the apparently it can really mess up what you're trying to get done.
Yeah.
If you have any contamination of any kind like that, but she was telling me how they are now working on manipulating individual alleles inside of the genetic code of specific plants to try and develop buds that create more THC or less that create more of the other different, and they're what, like 25 different cannabinoids.
Oh, there's hundreds and hundreds.
Oh, there are hundreds. There's okay. a lot. Yeah. There are hundreds. There's so it's lot, it's yeah. become a, it's become a scientific endeavor. There are people whose whole lives are built around developing new strains of these things.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, this plant is so tricky to cultivate, even on a commercial scale.
Really?
It's really so difficult. You know, they call, for example, a hermaphrodite. It's, you know, when the pollination from a female plant.
Please, they, them.
You know, when it can't happen, you know, when it can't happen, all just female plants. Oh. And they can't pollinate. There's no male plant. They can turn themselves into a male to ensure reproduction, you know, of the plants and certain stress factors. And this plant is so extremely difficult to cultivate, you know, and the challenge in commercial scale farming is being able to do it again and again and again, having that same standard, that same quality. So that's why we've shifted ourselves away from the cultivation side. We're very involved. We've got equity in about over 10 cultivation facilities.
Wow.
And that's our suppliers of these products. And we're setting up a manufacturing facility just outside Pretoria and another one in Malmesbury in Cape Town.
So where do we, just to go back to growing for a second, if people wanted to grow and they wanted to farm this stuff, not just for their own use, where in South Africa do you think the best places are to grow this? Or will, like, it, will it grow anywhere?
Yeah. So of course, the Eastern Cape is very well known for the history of this plant.
Thank God, Bondoland. That place is useless. I've never done anything good. And now finally, you're telling me we have a use for the Eastern Cape. Just turn it into one big fucking weed farm and we'll all be happy.
Yeah, if we manage to take to grab this opportunity in time. But
hey, that's good news, PE. You shit show. Maybe you finally have something to sell to the world, huh? Wouldn't that be nice? Now that all the car manufacturers are moving the hell out. Yeah. Be nice for East London too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but good soil for growing weed. There we are.
Yeah. But again, the challenge is when you want to cultivate commercially, you know, and have a commercial business out of this, you cannot plant in direct soil. It's going to be really difficult having that standard and quality.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer the question, the best is you can grow anywhere as long as it's a controlled environment, because you manipulate temperature, humidity. You know, it just takes a little bit more equipment to manage that depending on the weather and where you are. But we can really cultivate it anywhere because we need to have controlled cultivation environments. You know, because the standards are so high, you'll never be able to achieve it if you just plant direct soil organically.
Johan, what about people who hear this and they go, well, I want to. It's almost like people who want to put their solar panels back into the grid.
Mm.
Like, how big does it have to be a serious commercial enterprise? What's the line between, like, you're just messing around and now you must be taken seriously. You can actually sell this stuff.
Yeah. So to put a value on that, you're looking at about 20 million,
you know,
capital investment. And the reason is when you look at your capital outlays and your operational capital, your overheads, you need to diversify potential risk and income in the business. And you need at least 2 cultivation greenhouses, you know, to have quite a decent bottom line, you know, in your company or return on investment that makes so business sense.
This makes it impossible for the average person to turn this into a serious commercial venture.
That's why my 100%, and that's why my push is so much so for the inclusion and beneficiation of the whole supply chain. But how do we approach it? If we can't in 7 years get the commercial leg going, that's been the biggest hype globally, how the hell must SMMUs, small black farmers, even if they got the money they're seeking, they wouldn't know how to set up the right way in order to supply. So we want to make provision for them, say, listen, you don't have to conform to all of that. We will do that. But you can now just cultivate, we'll absorb it. We've got certain equipment and machines. We can extract the microbials and the metals, and now we can make it sellable, you know, to the commercial market.
So these small and medium-sized farms could then grow the stuff and sell it to you?
Yes, yes.
Ah.
But we need to start somewhere, you know, and it's going to take some time, but that's our push. And, you know, I've had a meeting with Cyril. I've been, you know, all around in the industry. I've written exams in Europe to understand the regulations better.
What does Cyril think about weed? Does he say, oh, do your best? It sounds like a good plan.
You know what the first thing is? You know what the first thing is he asked me?
What?
He said, do I have a joint? I promise you. We're going to see this somewhere. I know. But
No, that's fine. I don't think you're insinuating that the president wanted to smoke it. He was making a joke. But frankly, I'm kind of pleased that he was making a joke. It makes it a little more interesting. Who is currently, or where is the biggest farm in the country? Who's already, out of those 20 that you mentioned at the beginning, who's making it work?
Yes, so one of them is in Christiana, a massive, beautiful farm. It's one of the biggest potato farmers in South Africa.
Yeah.
Rascal Seed is one of them. Really, I've helped him set up. Great, great guy. They're doing it really on the right way, the right standards. Extremely beautiful site. Then, of course, Psilocybin is one of the most known companies in South Africa. I was there for 3 years when we did all of this stuff, and just had a bit of a different vision, but great company. They've got both cultivation and manufacturing. They've listed. Then, of course, Modelpak, Pharma Growers in Brits. Great, great company.
Okay.
Cultivation facility, huge, huge, huge. And then there's quite a few in the Western Cape as well. There's a few more here in South Africa, in Gauteng as well. But not so much exporting.
And you mentioned that the company name of one of them is Psilocybin, but do you think there's any chance that we may end up having a change in legislation around mushrooms at some point? Because I think all over the world, it's taking off as a way for people to get over PTSD, as a way for people to treat themselves, as a way for people to enlighten themselves, learn new things, experience things differently. It doesn't seem to have a terrible track record of, you know, real danger or things that people ought to be extremely worried about. Is there any chance? And I mean, you've got people in high places who you know, high places literally, who might be able to help us figure out whether or not this is even a possibility going forward.
Yeah.
Might South Africa, if we took the leap, become the place that could produce mushrooms for the rest of the world?
Absolutely. The answer
we could,
is,
right?
The answer is yes. So currently it's Schedule 7.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't trade if it's not at least a Schedule 6. So at the time when I was at Psilocybin, funny enough, with CILO, Psilocybin.
Yeah.
And we spoke to the inspectorate unit at SAFRA, the regulatory authority. And we said, if we had a demand for Psilocybin, would we be able to get a license to then cultivate it and export it? But because it's a spore, we can't do it with cannabis. You know, it will be sending out cannabis with mushrooms on them and all
kinds
of stuff. But you get a research permit that you can get already now at SAFRA that you can apply for if there's a demand, and you can prove and submit all the necessary documentation, and then use that push to drive the commercialization aspect of the licensing. Lesotho already started with that.
Really?
The same thing that happened with cannabis. Lesotho is already ahead. They've issued a few. There's a company called Cube Cytec, and there's another company in Lesotho as well that's very busy with it. And that's something we're also going to be focusing on. But we are not setting up specifically just for cannabis. How do you invest all this money and you can only focus on one product line? So we've diversified, but that's to come, you know?
I think it would be such a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think so many people I already know would be much better if they had either some weed or some mushrooms to calm them the fuck down. Honestly, the world could only be a better place if you ask me. And I'm saying that as someone who's not a regular user of any of this stuff. Mm. In the case of weed, not at all a user.
Yeah.
And I think it would be a very, very good idea for us to explore the potential of making ourselves a leading place in the world for developing these drugs, which have always been a part of the human story and which, frankly, are just waiting to be, you know, used, to be harnessed.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems obvious to me. Anyway, I'm really pleased you came in to tell us all of this. Where can people get hold of you and where can they find out more information?
They can visit our website, nexuspharma.co.za.
Nexuspharma.co.za.
Yes, just nexuspharma.co.za. Or they could send an email to info@nexuspharma.co.za.
Magic. Thank you, Johan. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And big thank you to you, Leanne. Oh, okay. Let's take a look. Let's hear what Johan thinks of this. You've seen a lot of weed farms. Let's take a look at what you think of this. Give it a rating out of 10. Jesus. Look
yes,
at that.
That's huge tomato plants.
Right? Wow. Wow, that's incredible. You should be very proud.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, these plants, which is so nice, if you keep them in a vegetative state, they can really get enormous.
They look like conifers.
That's like... No, that's impressive.
A conifer of weed.
Wow.
No, and this is such a great photo. You know, it also symbolizes for me always when I see this, just it's an opportunity for everyone globally. I mean, my father told me the other day as well, never in his time, and he's almost 80, mm-hmm. never in his time that they have opportunity globally that everyone could jump on like this.
Yeah.
And here we can literally collaborate with this guy that just sent the picture.
Sure.
Us doing the business, and I love it. You know, I love it.
Well, get hold of him, nexuspharma.co.za. I love it. Thank you, Johan.
Thank you so much.
Very good. Everybody have a happy day and enjoy the start of a brand new week. We're in the month of October, the most beautiful month of all, and we're heading towards the end of the year. So take a big, deep breath before you realize it. It's going to be Christmas and New Year. Right. Thanks, Leanne.
Okie dokie.
Thanks, Johan. Thanks, producers James and Flex. And thank you to you. We'll see you on Wednesday, 6 a.m. Be good.
Bedre, oh, bedre dag for dag. Bedre og bedre, og bruk armene og bruk bena. Ikke gå rundt stolen. Ikke gå rundt, nei. Og bruk armene og bruk bena.